the subcommittee of the subcommittee. I apologize for my members not being here. We will take appropriate measures to castigate them appropriately. We do have invited testimony today, and we would like to invite Senator Hannan to come forward. We appreciate you here. We're honored to have you, Senator Hannan. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Now, we've got a piggy bank there that belongs to the American Cancer Society, so if you'd like to use the acronyms like OLCC and those kinds of things, they're only 2 bits apiece.
2 bits apiece. All right. Well, I'll try to restrain myself.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and staff, for the record, my name is Len Hannan, State Senator, District 3, and I'm appearing here today in support of the OLCC budget. But more importantly, I'm here to give a little bit of historical perspective, something that concerns me deeply about the OLCC. Is that the commissioners are criticized and vilified if they don't raise enough revenue, and if they do raise enough revenue, it's stolen away in the state general fund without compensating the people who are raising the revenue. And so it would be my sincere desire that you tried to work within the confines of your committee to encourage just compensation for the agents who go out and raise the revenue, and look at how the types of pressures and mandates are placed upon the commission members. I'm reminded by a good friend who served many years here in the state Senate, former Senator Keith Burbidge, that John Barleycorn is the impetus for raising the revenue on the OLCC, and we should also be mindful that the agents who are expected to go out and raise that revenue by sales are not always compensated, and just a little bit of increase here or there can make on a weekend. I can take you to Southern Oregon, and it's like a convoy going over the border to California to buy liquor because the state's markup has increased dramatically one way or the other. And so these are some of the things that I'm here to ask respectfully the committee to consider, look at in this budget, because I know the difficulty and I know the problems associated with the OLCC. If you want a quarter on that, I'll be glad to contribute.
I already bought OLCC. It cost me a dollar.
Okay. But I think that the Liquor Control Commission was created for temperance, and we lose sight of that sometimes. We tell them to go out and generate more revenue so we can sell more booze so we can treat more alcoholism, and it's a real dichotomy. And then the agents are left out of the equation. And so, Mr. Chairman, members, I would respectfully urge you to look well to the commission, to give them the proper tools to go out to conduct their business, and give the agents the proper tools to generate the revenue, but to be justly compensated. I know that you or I, as a business person, would not probably enter into a contract like most of these agents are required to suffice under. It's substantially unreasonable sometimes, and you can only sell so much goodwill. Beyond that, you have a intangible product that you cannot exchange with somebody in sale. But yet your whole life, your whole earnings are tied up in the operation of the store. So I would respectfully request you, Mr. Chairman, to look at the agent's compensation. It's an issue that each session manages to find itself swept under the rug, and promises are made, promises are unkept for the agent's compensation. So with that, I would be happy to entertain any questions that you or Senator Winters might have.
Senator?
Well, just thank you for coming and imparting your long and serious wisdom to us. You've been around for a long time, and I appreciate your testimony on just compensation.
Thank you very much, Senator. We do appreciate you being here advocating on behalf of our agents.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You kind of mentioned unlimited expenditure on that.
Oh, my good friend, the former speaker, Mr. Lang, who is a member of the Liquor Control Commission, there's an issue that budgetary-wise... we get caught up in here, and that is the non-limited expenditure. And I would caution you to look at that item. I know the staff is blinking her eyes and rolling her eyes and saying,
I am not.
What the
for the record.
But this is an issue that needs to be addressed as well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Winters. It's... limitations and controls upon the commission to do its job. I think what we have to do is give flexibility to the commissioners. If they set about to do these non-limited expenditures, we have to give them flexibility in which we can do their job rather than criticize them for not doing their job and then bring them in each biennium and try to rope tie two arms and a leg behind each other and say, then now go out and do your job. There is a management tool of conducting business of the Liquor Control Commission, and that is given through the non-expenditure limitations. So I would respectfully encourage you to look at that item as well.
Relative to the non-limited expenditure authority, your thought would be to allow that to become a continuing limitation so that...
I think it needs to be a floating mechanism so that management can respond. I think sometimes OLCC is caught up in having to come back to the legislature, or the emergency board, or somebody else, and say, well, we have this circumstance, we have this situation, we need to change this. One of my concerns as a legislator for some time is that we criticize on one hand the oversight issue of the Liquor Control Commission, but yet on the other hand, we don't want to take the time to really oversight the issue. And then when they do something that's maybe a little objectionable, then we want to tow them in. And so I would ask you to give them a floating capability out there that they can management respond. Give them the flexibility to do their job as a commission.
Thank you, Senator. Relative to the, there's been a number of studies, and certainly there are bills within the current legislative process to attempt to make to privatize the OLCC or to decentralize liquor distribution in the state of Oregon. Do you have any feel on that, Senator, that you'd like to impart any of your wisdom there?
Yes, I do. The spinning sound you hear outside this building is probably the Christian Women's Temperance Union spinning in their grave, because the Liquor Control Commission was created for temperance. And I would remind you to check in the Constitution of the State of Oregon, and the Liquor Control Commission is contained within that body. And the word temperance is used quite freely. And it's a situation that you would see a liquor store out here in every Safeway, Albertsons, and everywhere else. And I don't think that's the kind of liquor experience that people expect in Oregon. They want to see it in some kind of managed circumstance.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that wisdom and insight. Other questions of Senator Hanna?
I just like his descriptions of temperance and
spinning sound we hear.
Yeah. And that the ladies probably are turning over.
Well, 29 years ago when I came to this process, there were little ladies in tennis shoes walking up and down the hallway lobbying on behalf of the Liquor Control Commission. moderation be in fact impacted. And we've changed that over the years and changed the number of licenses, A licenses, B and C licenses, and all those other things. So it's not too many members that I recall still exist. Most of them are deceased.
Well, again,
but their efforts should be honored.
Thank you very much, and we'll make every attempt to do that and still be able to provide the necessary incentive for those folks that are our agents that distribute and advocate on behalf of the Liquor Control Commission's mission.
And I can say this objectively because I spent 16 years being a tester of this commodity and being in recovery the last 6 years. I don't want to see it on every street corner in the state of Oregon.
Thank you. I appreciate your mentioning that on behalf of those that are attempting to overcome the intemperate use of this particular commodity. Thank you again,
Senator. Right.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
We also have invited testimony Bob Drake, Mayor of Beaverton, who chaired the Governor's Task Force on the alcohol beverage industry. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, good morning. I'm Rob Drake. I am the Mayor of Beaverton. This year I also serve as the President of the League of Oregon Cities. And lastly, and the reason I'm before you today is I was Chairman of the Governor's Task Force on the alcohol beverage industry. Knowing that I burned my 9-year-old son's waffles this morning, and that I am an acronym user, I'm going to go ahead and just voluntarily contribute a dollar this morning, and I'm more than glad to do that. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to just comment briefly about the task force and discuss the recommendations?
Could you give us a high-level recommendation list from the task force?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Governor's Task Force on Alcohol Beverage Industry was appointed by former Governor Kitzhaber, and we began work mid-last year. I have a unique perspective. About 30 years ago, I was a co-licensee, and I spent a number of years as one of the senior executives with Miletus Beverage, and so I was on the retailer side, and most recently, the last 11 years, I've been Beaverton's mayor, and we have a strong mayor form of government, and so I'm our city's chief executive. And I've had an opportunity to see the liquor industry and the OLCC from three very distinct vantage points, and so serving as chairman was probably a natural for me, but I did not seek it out. So it was an interesting 8 months, and I enjoyed the service. What we found in the process, we held most of our meetings in Portland, but we also went out on the road and went to Pendleton and Medford so that we could invite testimony from around the state. And we finished our last meeting in early February here in Salem, and that was partly for the courtesy of the two state senators and state rep who will have begun the session at that point. And we thought we should finish up so they could have easy access to capital. Senators Ferrioli and Morissette were on the committee, as was Representative Betsy Johnson. What we found broadly was that the Liquor Commission itself is very well managed. It's an agency that has very little, if any, fat. And lastly, is an agency that will never embarrass the governor, the legislature, or the citizens of Oregon. It's an agency that does its job. It's not flashy, and for the most part has been reasonably well managed. I would say even better than that, it's been very well managed. And as with any agency, whether public or private, there are always ways to improve. And that's really what our task force found, is that there are ways to improve how they do business, but that overall, you have an agency that is doing exactly what you would expect a state agency to do. The only difference is, and having been in private industry and also being innovative as our city's mayor, I think they operate with one hand behind their back. And it would be nice this day and age to give an agency that has earned trust to allow it to operate more efficiently and in a little more business-like way, and I will be glad to go over those. We ended up with 13 major recommendations. The committee had consensus on the first 12, and what I would like to do, Mr. Chairman, is focus on the first 12 and recognize that 13, although it was a majority of the task force members attending at the last meeting, as you can well bet with our two backgrounds in politics, referencing an increase in privilege taxes on beer and wine didn't come without some controversy. And there was so much compelling evidence heard over the months of the task force that at least it deserved a mention to ask the legislature to look at the current privilege tax and with the possibility of perhaps backfilling some of the lost revenue that for treatment, for prevention and enforcement. Those things which are likely, due to tough financial times of the state, are likely to see significant cutbacks, not only currently, but possibly in the future. So let me focus on the first 12 that we basically held hands on. We heard a great deal of compelling testimony, and these are in order, not particularly in preference, but just how they came out. We heard a great deal of testimony about how the liquor stores run and the liquor agent compensation. And the liquor stores should be allowed, referring to recommendation one, which is on the last page, to allow the liquor agents more flexibility in advertising the liquor stores and their products. Let me give you an example. Mark Freeman, who was on the committee as a liquor agent in Hood River, brought to our attention that when he advertises, he has to refer to himself as a mixer shop. And no one knows where there's a mixer shop in Hood River because that isn't his real business name. And because of current regulations, he can't say this is the Hood River liquor store. And he can talk about mixers and he can talk about snacks, but he, to date, has not been able to refer to himself as the liquor store. And I think most of us, though I'm not a non-drinker like Senator Hannon, I'm a very light drinker, and I was telling one of the agents before we started this morning that if I make one trip to a liquor store a year, that's the most to keep the house stocked for my in-laws and our Thanksgiving guests. And beyond that, and the nice thing is that hard liquor does not age, and so you can keep it for a long time. But the liquor stores really operate with both hands behind their backs, and there was no interest on the task force's part to just open it up to just wanton advertising. But we really recommend that the liquor stores be allowed to do reasonable levels of advertising, not only of their existence, but of their products.
Rob, would that require a legislative fix, or is that a rule?
No, Mr. Chairman. It would be a rule, and part of the recommendations in here involve rules. Some involve changes in state law, and it's really a hodgepodge of recommendations here. But I would say that anything the legislature could do to encourage the commission to continue to evolve as an efficient agency would be helpful.
Let me excuse me for just a moment, Rob.
Yes.
Senators Devlin and Winters, this is in your large binder under the tab of agency-wide planning, and we're with Mayor Drake from Beaverton, and he is presenting to us the findings from the final report of the Oregon Alcohol Beverage Industry as published in February of 2003. And we are on page 7, moving on to page 8. Thank you.
Moving on to number 2, increase the agent's compensation fund, regularly calculated 8.54% of forecasted liquor sales revenue. We heard, again, very compelling testimony that the compensation as it's currently configured for the liquor agents is inadequate. And considering, and I'm giving you broad comments from the task force, considering the revenue generator that the commission is in itself, by paying the agents adequate compensation, you'll not only continue to attract And if you don't, you won't attract high-quality retailers to run the liquor stores. Secondly, the commission is doing everything it can to encourage the liquor stores to move from the back of shops and shopping centers, from the far end of shopping centers, into a better retail position. And they can't do so because as the visibility and the position of the store gets better, rents usually increase. And if the agents aren't adequately compensated, they can't put their stores in the best face and the best condition they need to be. So the task force, which was made up of people in the healthcare industry, the retail industry, government, very broad cross-section of folks, and you'll find the membership early in the report, there was strong consensus about increasing the compensation for the agents. And we respectfully suggested that the state look very hard at that and try and make it more attractive to be a liquor agent.
Mayor Drake, in your communications right now, the estimated average is 8.54%. What were the numbers that you heard as you discussed that compensation increase potential?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear exact figures, and I think that I would probably leave that to others who would better know. The committee felt that it needed to be increased, but we didn't discuss an exact
okay,
amount.
Fine.
And I think there are experts who can give you those figures. I also have with me today, and I would guess she's on the invited list, but Karen Gregory is the interim director of the Liquor Commission. And for any technical answers, she's available if I get in trouble. So.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Thank you. Number three, provide agents quicker compensation payments. As with anything, Mr. Chairman, cash flow is a very critical issue for any business. And we must think of the liquor stores as businesses. And the turnaround from the state could be quicker. And again, there was consensus that the compensation of the payments could happen sooner. The state is able to do that if it so chooses, and it would go a long way to help with the cash flow for daily operation of the stores. Number four, establish a business reinvestment fund or cost center for OLCC to facilitate its entrepreneurial efforts. Let me talk a little bit about that. No matter what cash the Liquor Commission brings in today, anything that would sell, for example, recycling plastic, there is a market for that. But for the OLCC staff to be innovative, there's very little incentive beyond the fact that they would be good employees. The Liquor Commission, if it sells something, provides a service, everything goes back to the State General Fund, and the Liquor Commission is not credited for that effort. And the task force heard, again, compelling testimony that it would be nice for the commission to be able to find innovative ways to either save money or to earn some additional money, but reinvest it back into the daily operations of the commission. Any business does this, and you wouldn't take an innovative idea from a business where they could create some money or save money and not reward it by saying, well, you did a great job, but it's just it won't even be taxed, it's just disappearing, and that's basically what's happening to the commission. There were several examples given of lost opportunities for the commission to have this fund or funds to be able to reinvest in what they do. Number five, exempt OLCC's merchandising business functions from adherence to some state statutes or administrative rule requirements intended for providing citizens with non-business services. Let me give a prime example given by the the distillery reps gave a great example. In transit, sometimes some of the liquor product is damaged, and they repackage the product. But to do so, the Liquor Commission cannot, or at least in repackaging it for these distillery reps, the money does not accrue or benefit back to the Liquor Commission. And so the distillery reps take the damaged products back out of the warehouse. It's all accounted for, but it's in essence transferred back out. They take it to a third party and have it repackaged, and then it's brought back into the warehouse. Well, during slower periods or down times, Liquor Commission staff in the warehouse could repackage that for a fee. And we heard from Jay Nelson, who is a distillery rep, and I've known Jay myself over 20 years because of my time in the industry. Jay would rather have the pay the Liquor Commission staff to do it and not have it transferred out and back in, but because of the way the rules are administered and the way the state currently state statutes are written, this kind of innovative, effective merchandising can't be done. And this the more effective way of handling.
Is that, again, is that a rule within the OLCC or is it by state statute?
It's a budget limitation.
Okay. All right.
That was one example and there are others. And again, the committee felt that with the way, with our review of the commission, that the commission could efficiently handle these and still do it within their existing workload. Number six, conduct legislative review every 4 years of OLCC merchandising program's viability. Now, I'm smart enough to know as a local elected official that one city council in my world can't bind the next to something other than the legal contract. However, it appears, and I've been around long enough that I've seen this from multiple angles, every 2 years the Liquor Commission becomes the whipping boy of broadly the legislative process. And if you're looking for consistency in a state agency, hoping to attract the best employees, and looking long term, the shadow of wondering what's going to happen to the Liquor Commission every 2 years. Is it going to be privatized? Is there going to be a private warehouse? Is it going to be all CC-run warehouse? Someone who's interested in a career in this industry, I think, correctly, would look askance and sort of wonder, will the commission be there as I know it 2 years from now? It's an odd-numbered year. Legislature's in session. And the committee had a very long discussion about how long a period of time we would recommend that you would take a formal review of the Liquor Commission. And we actually, I think there were many of us who felt the cycle should be a little longer, but just because of legislative realities and realities of the world, we settled on 4 years. I realize that no funding is permanent on anything, and again, in my world, I fully understand that. But broadly, someone wouldn't say, well, I'm not sure we're going to have the state police in 2 years, or I'm not sure we're going to have this agency or that. And the threat over the commission hangs very heavily. And as a young college graduate in 1973, I was down here working for Reagan Tax Research. And I can remember the discussion back then. And this has continued every 2 years. And so it's partly, I think, to establish some legitimacy as a state agency. And I was very interested in your conversation with Senator Hannon, because at looking at some longevity for an agency that has a well-established stated purpose. I mean, I've been on both sides of the industry, and the commission serves a valuable purpose, period. And the committee felt so. Number seven, assure licensing processes are streamlined and efficient, and consider proportionate self-funding multi-year licenses. Let me explain. Every year we review liquor licenses for renewals. And in many cases, the vast, vast, vast majority of licensees follow the law. They're good operators. They provide a service to the community. They encourage moderate drinking, and they operate very well. I'll give a classic example. Chris Girard, the president and CEO of Plaid Pantry Stores, was a member of the committee. Pam Erickson, the just recently retired director, acknowledged that Plaid Pantry Stores had a better record of compliance than her own state liquor stores. Well, I wouldn't think that Plaid Pantry would deserve the same kind of scrutiny that a problem establishment would. I won't name any by name, but we all know them. We have them in our own communities. And why not look at a more streamlined process and or look at maybe a two-year license for someone like a Plaid Pantry, for a Safeway store, for a McMenamin's pub, places that have a long established excellent record of not only working with the commission but local communities. Additionally, I think there's some belief, and I think the actual Liquor Commission staff shares this, that their process, though efficient, could be more efficient. It's a little cumbersome at times, probably a little duplicative, and there are great ways to streamline. These would be probably changes in administrative rules, but it would work toward efficiency in the agency.
Mayor, let me just ask a question there. I know that when that liquor license, that beer and wine license, comes up for renewal,
yes,
that your city council will sit on that as well and have an opportunity to proceed with that or not at your own recommendation. Would a two-year or a four-year licensure for these kinds of facilities, would that run amok of any local regulation, do you think, city or county?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. 2 years certainly wouldn't. I can't speak with any authority about four. There are certainly people I would be comfortable with with more extended period. There are others not. And my experience, again, seeing it from different angles, is once somebody gets a liquor license, the burden to remove it is exceedingly high. And I'm not advocating that because I realize it's a critical, very crucial part of the profit and loss picture for both on-premise and off-premise licensees. However, the fact is it's still a privilege, and if people are abusing it, they don't monitor their employees, and people are selling to minors, and things are happening out in the parking lot, on and on and on, people deserve to lose their license. And this is my view, Mr. Chairman, and probably not the committee's. I think we should be tougher on some licensees because they get away with murder, and it takes a long time before that license is revoked. It's a tough process. I think people should have due process. I would never, ever recommend anything less than that, but we're very tolerant and very patient with some licensees, both Liquor Commission and local governments, and some abuse it and push it to the edge. There's a reference here to consider proportionate self-funding. In some parts of the state, cities and counties try and collect some or all of the cost of processing land use applications, for example, or development review. And pricing is according to whatever it costs to process the permit, and some try and collect a certain percentage of that cost. Currently, the license fees and the application fees have little bearing on what it costs to process them. We were recommending that the commission look at that and consider either some percentage of self-funding or 100% of the cost. I think the industry would probably blanch at 100%. But in the process of streamlining and setting up a hypothetical percentage of collection, it would make the commission more self-funding. Lastly, multi-year licenses. We briefly talked about that. Most licensees, I would venture in the 90 percentile, are no-brainers. And there are those that need to be looked at harder, but there should be also some mechanism to review it in an earlier period if maybe management changes and a place becomes a problem as opposed to being a good operator. 8, increase local government's review process for new liquor license applications from 30 to 60 days. Again, we received some very compelling testimony, and I know from our own city, we're referring here to only new licenses, people that haven't proven the test of time, and citizen involvement is becoming a stronger and stronger component of local government. And I know from our experience as a city, we have a very active citizen network, which grew out of Senate Bill 100 from the 1973 session. And while they meet monthly, the fact is if a liquor license application is dropped in, not intentionally, but just is dropped into the process a day after they meet, it's another 30 days before that neighborhood association has an opportunity to formally comment on a license. 30 days for a new license, someone they haven't worked with, someone no one knows, is a very short period of time. I wouldn't advocate lengthening renewals, because if people have proven themselves, why make the process more difficult? But we received very compelling testimony that increasing it to 60 days makes everyone's life easier. We had no intention of trying to hamstring the industry at all, because you have many operators who can process quickly, and I know in our city we don't try and push the 60 days. That's not our intent. But some people take a lot more background than others. I can think of an example of a restaurant in our town. I can actually see it from City Hall. They were new to the state, a very complex operation, had multiple owners, and it took a while for us to investigate who these people were. There was some politic to it, too, so it made it difficult, and it was very visible, but 30 days to process something new is just no time at all.
Now I'm interested in what you're saying relative to local government's involvement there. Local government is charged with the responsibility of investigating the owners and doing the underlying research?
Mr. Chairman, no, but we participate with the Liquor Commission, and at this point, our recommendations are actually only advisory. But trying to tell your constituents that when there may be some controversy around a facility is extremely difficult, and so we share in the investigation with the Liquor Commission. We're a very willing partner with the Liquor Commission staff.
Is that true for all local governments?
I think many do, yes.
Okay.
And it will depend on the issue, and I realize that state law is very clear about types of entertainment, but along with that comes some information processing, too, with your citizens.
Well, it could be not just the fact that they have a license, it may be the other ancillary businesses.
That's correct.
System. Thank you.
That's correct. Thank you. Number 9, explore opportunities to reduce investigative duplications by sharing OLCC and Lottery Commission's investigations where possible. The task force recognized that you have two very efficient organizations in terms of background investigation looking at many of the same clients. And in the case of the Lottery Commission, they contacted the Liquor Commission for information, and we saw broadly opportunities for being more efficient sharing background investigations. And we would just look to some kind of direction to the commission to perhaps share efficiencies. Number 10, examine allowing liquor licensees to use bank cards when purchasing distilled spirits from liquor stores. That seemed, Mr. Chairman and members, a no-brainer with today's business world as it is. Many businesses today do purchase supplies using credit cards, and it seemed like something that would take the Liquor Commission from the dark ages into just a new business environment. Number 11, establish a business advisory board to consult with the OLCC. The OLCC, while efficiently managed, hasn't been allowed to be as innovative as it could be. I know from my work as our city's chief executive, I'm always getting advice from my business community, sometimes unsolicited, but sometimes well-earned, too. And there are a lot of businesses in this state that would not only be flattered, but would be more than willing to provide public service. And I'm talking high-level executives who would be willing to look at what the commission does and offer advice. And this seemed like an excellent idea to assist the commission in their becoming more efficient. 13, increase the production limit from 500 to 1,000 barrels a year for brewery public house licensees to be permitted to sell malt beverages at wholesale to retail licensees. Brian McMenamin from the McMenamin Brothers Business was on the committee, and we actually heard not only that Brian was in agreement broadly representing the Oregon brewing industry, but we heard compelling evidence from a gentleman in Southern Oregon who is actually operating out of an old family farm, a dairy farm. And he's taking those stainless steel containers that milk used to be in, and he has a brewery. And he's currently limited by the amount of beer that he produces to be able to move product from his brew house and his brew pub to a retail establishment elsewhere. And he would hope to expand, and he can only do so if this law were to change. So you had a husband-wife talk to us about it, and what was exciting about that, that's really, and again, with my business background in the beverage industry, I started in the business 30 years ago when many of today's Oregon wineries got going, and they used to sell their wine out of the trunks of their cars. And they'd go in and be on both knees begging grocers to give them two or three facings in a store or a display. And I could feel the same spirit from this young husband and wife. And having known the McMenamins as long as I have, and seeing Brian McMenamin, who happened to be in Southern Oregon with us when the task force went down, Brian was nodding, and you could see, and then afterwards in discussion with him, that example reminded him of his and his brother's Mike start. They started very simply the same way. So the spirit of Oregon's innovation was in this recommendation. It seemed like a gimme, a very easy one for the legislature to do. Lastly, number 13, and I mentioned it earlier, the majority of the task force recommended the legislature review the need for an increase in privilege taxes on beer and wine. Just for a sense of history, and Representative Johnson can certainly corroborate a further discussion on this, but the only thing on the table when this issue broadly came up was the 10-cent a glass increase, which some or all of you may have read about. And in the end, I think there was, I don't know if it was consensus, but a vast majority felt that 10 cents a glass was just too big a bite. And so that was taken off the table and nothing else was offered. But as a fallback position, and the committee was divided on it, it was basically the healthcare industry versus the beverage industry. And they were basically divided on it, but what we did, the majority felt, was at least needed to be reviewed considering the cutbacks in state revenue, and again, for enforcement, treatment, and prevention. Let's see, Mr. Chairman, if there was anything else, if I can't think of anything else broadly that I would say, I would be more than welcome to answer any questions. And if I can't, I would ask Ms. Gregory to join me up here to answer any technical questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Johnson, you sat on this task force. Any salient comments that you'd like to make relative to the report, which is published the 12th of February?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only just to say that it was very capably chaired by Mayor Drake. I think that the composition of the committee was representative of all segments and points of view of some of the debates that have turned around the question, some of the big questions that have faced OLCC. the question of privatization, the question of recommendations of any tax increases. At times, the exchanges were lively. I want to commend Mayor Drake for seeing his way through making sure everyone got an opportunity to be on the record with some very important issues. It was staffed very capably. I think the minutes were an accurate reflection of the work of the committee. And while there was certainly some disagreement at the table, at the end of the day, I think all of the issues got a very comprehensive and thoughtful airing, and it was a pleasure to serve on a committee that was as well-run and as well-staffed and, frankly, as comprehensive in its overview as this one was.
Thank you very much. And Representative Johnson, I appreciate, and I would express that just from my own aspect, but as well as the government subcommittee, your involvement in many of these worthwhile and laudable activities and the dedication of time which you have and many good community building activities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Devlin's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Drake, I don't want to seem inattentive, but I found that in this session, in a time of scarcity, if you only have to do two or three things at the same time, you're probably lucky. One question I did have, and I was listening to part of the testimony, in terms of those items that are in here that would be, in a sense, concrete recommendations that would require statutory authority to actually do them, do we know how many have actually been submitted in terms of actual legislation for consideration?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, no, I don't know, Senator. I know yesterday I saw a draft of legislation with Senator Morissette's and Senator Ferrioli's names on it relating to increasing the new license processing time. I saw a draft of a bill that had come out of legislative council. And I believe that some, if not all, of these will have some kind of sponsor, and they're moving forward. I know your timing is getting late, but I can't speak with authority how many are getting legs and going forward.
It may be appropriate to have Karen and or John Stu involved. Karen, do you have that information? I know John is working on it. Has kindly provided this and have that list. I would like, and that, thank you, Senator Devlin, for that excellent segue. I would like to, I don't want this to be a task force report that does nothing but collect dust. I think that it would be a shame to have that happen, particularly where we have good interaction with the agency here as well as a lot of good discussion going on. So with that, Karen, John, you have a list that you provided to us. Can we just go down the list of the recommendations of the task force and kind of see what kinds of actions and whether these will require rulemaking, assuming that the commission were to go along with the task force recommendation or make some other modifications, and then what may require any other kinds of legislative activity. So can we just take a quick, and I think that would be a valuable use of our time where we've had the where we do have the chair and we've had the report today. So allowing liquor agents more flexibility in advertising, that I understand is a change of rule.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Karen Gregory, interim director, and the first item would be a rule change, and actually we are already working on that. The commissioners instituted initiating rulemaking on a number of our advertising rules at their March commission. So that particular item is in process.
Excellent. Thank you. Number two, increasing agents' compensation. We will discuss that in the budgetary process. It's my understanding that that is largely a budgetary process together with working, and we've met, and it's been my pleasure to have met with the folks from DISCUS as well as the agents' representatives and some of the agents themselves to discuss this, and staff has additional information for us as well. Number three. Or did you want to input anything on number two, the agent's compensation at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And number three, quicker compensation payments. That's a cash flow issue, and that would do have something to do with the Treasury and his Department of Administrative Services. What's the hold up there?
Mr. Chairman, actually, we're working on doing a couple of things in-house. The way the agents are compensated, basically they're compensated at the end of the month for either the sales for that month or the sales for the month prior, depending on where they sit. As far as longevity as an agent, quite frankly. However, there is a period at the mid-month where they can get their base compensation. And so what we're trying to do and what we're looking at is making that mid-month check come sooner.
It sounds kind of cumbersome. Is there some speed up in the accounting system that needs to be made there?
Mr. Chairman, I think we can do that base pay. We can speed that part up. Actually, only about half of the agents make use of that at this time.
So there's kind of a settlement check that comes as much as 60 days later?
Mr. Chair, the check that comes, it could be 60 days after the sale, or it's 30 days, again, depending on whether they're A or B agents, and that's a complication that we probably don't want to get into. That is their payment for every bottle that they sell. That's basically their commission payment.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I do want to get into it. It surprises me that this is the first time that I'm aware of this. Maybe it was something I missed in the task force. But you have different pay structures depending on what kind of agent it is being serviced by your accounting department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, actually the pay structure is identical. It's a timing issue. And for the agents who have been in the system for a long period of time, many of them are paid on what we call an A schedule. And they, let's use March as an example. If their sales for March, they're paid at the end of March for all of their March sales. If they're a B agent, let me back up a minute, and when they retire from the system, they get no final check. If you're a B agent, and those agents really are more current agents, the ones who have come into the system predominantly in the last 8 years and forward, those folks are paid at the end of March for the sales they made in February. And when they leave the system, then they will get a final check for the sale that they made in their final month of selling.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson, please.
Has that been a subject of any controversy within your agent community that you have ostensibly two different schedules for different agents?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, a number of years ago it was, and we gave agents the opportunity of moving to whichever schedule they liked. And when agents come in, our fiscal services director has a conversation with each new agent, so they choose which schedule they'd like to be on.
Okay, so this is an agent choice issue. It's not something that is arbitrary from OLCC.
That's correct, Representative Johnson.
So the B agents, those more recently, within the last 8 years, are actually selecting to be paid this alternative to be paid on at the end of the month to be paid for the prior month's sales?
That's my understanding, Mr. Chair.
And they're selecting that uniformly of the newer agents? They want to be paid 60 days out?
Mr. Chairman, after our fiscal services director compares both instances for them, I think they make the business decision that it is actually better for them to have that span of time so that they know when they leave the system they're going to get paid for the higher sales more than likely that they're going to have that last month. If you're in the system for 10 years, for instance, you know, that last month that you're selling, if you're an A agent, you don't get that sales. If you're a B agent, you end up getting all of those sales.
Boy, that's Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, this is a little mysterious for me. Two things. I would welcome hearing from the agents about this when we get into the public testimony piece, and with the chair's permission, invite their testimony on this issue. And secondly, I just flat don't understand the piece that someone would voluntarily make an election to not receive compensation for the last month of their sales. And I thought that's what I heard you say. And it mystifies me. Help me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, what I'd like to do, if I could, is bring that back in a overhead so that I could have something visual to show you. Because I admit it's very difficult for me to talk about without having something to kind of point to and compare the two things.
Okay, so let's please get into that. because this is an issue. Number three, quicker compensation payments. I know that if I were selling Cracker Jacks or bubble gum, I would like to be paid as I went along. Drake's been in the retail business, I assume, and as a result of that, he understands that it's pretty important for even though the inventory is consigned by the OLCC, it's still pretty important that I get paid just as quickly as I possibly can for the work that I've done in order to continue to turn my cash. And it is a cash flow problem. That's what he mentioned. Item number three, and so we will address number two while we're, or number three while we're here. Item number four, regarding the establish a business investment, that's a little more complex. Facilitate the entrepreneurial efforts of the commission. Can you tell us that I understand is a budget issue?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And tell me what that would look like. I'm interested in that.
Mr. Chairman, what we would like to see on this is something very similar to what we talked about earlier. We have, for instance, our shrink wrap machine that we're selling, the shrink wrap that's compressed. We have a cardboard baler, and we sell that cardboard. The example of Mr. Nelson, the distillery rep, who would like to have us be doing his work on anything that comes in mislabeled. If what we would like to have is a test, if you will, an investment fund for, let's say, $90,000. And if we were to take in those kinds of dollars, what we would like to do is to be able to buy, like a forklift, to buy equipment in our warehouse so that we wouldn't have to purchase it in a capital package the following year. So that's the kind of functioning that we see for this business reinvestment fund. And it would allow us to do some work with the industry in a variety of ways, as well as make use of dollars that we're getting.
Now, you have forklifts there now, do you know?
Mr. Chair, that's correct, but there's certainly a life cycle on our forklifts, and we do replace them every few years.
And so the business investment fund to facilitate entrepreneurial efforts, I guess I'm having a little bit of trouble trying to differentiate what you would do with an additional forklift. Basically, what you're telling me is that either the forklift is only marginally sufficient to get the job done, that it's being used all of the time, and we don't have the opportunity to use the forklift to do some other things that would be nice to get done and may make us more money.
Mr. Chairman, what I'm saying is that our capital budget over time could actually be decreased, because we would be able to replace our forklifts with, not all of them, but maybe one or two each biennium, with this inflow of dollars.
Okay.
And, you know, our staff would kind of feel good about the fact that there's a forklift that they contributed to, if you will.
So it'd be a kind of a revolving equipment fund of some sort then?
That's correct, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gregory, I'm sorry I didn't pursue this at the task force meeting, but frankly it didn't occur to me until right this second. Could you envision a time when this capital equipment entrepreneurial fund would ever achieve enough size that it could be available to your partners, the agents? I'm thinking of a scenario, and what triggered my mind on this was the investment in technology that OLCC is currently requiring of agents in what is, by anybody's measure, a recessionary time. And I'm trying to think of some of the smaller stores that simply may not have the capital to invest. There are many examples of grant programs or loan programs, more specifically, where out of this fund a low-interest loan could be offered to agents to do the kind of capital investment that would help foster a system-wide entrepreneurial spirit, so that it wouldn't just be capital acquisition for the home office, but actually the benefit of having this additional funds could flow through to your partners. And would you envision a time when this fund could extend for some kind of a grant or loan program for your agents?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't know why not. You know, I obviously haven't had time to kind of work those issues through. The one question would be the budget separation. We have a budget limitation for our agency and also a separate one for liquor agents, but I would suspect that the legislature, this committee, could help us with that if you were interested. So I think that's certainly something we could take a look at and would be open to.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson, you set me to thinking, you know, I mean, if we get the OLCC into a grant program, then pretty soon we've got the Department of Transportation in a grant program and OEB in a grant program. Pretty soon we're going to run OECD out of business. Maybe we better...
Yes, and your point?
Far too pretty from a look.
And your point is?
I think that's a great idea, particularly extending it out. But it also then ties in and segues to number five, exempt OLCC's business merchandising business functions from adherence to same state statutes and administrative rules, which are intended for providing citizens with non-business services. That's the repackaging issue. Those are some of the other kinds of things that we talked about, and that's a budget limitation issue that we should address. Number six, conduct legislative review every 4 years or more of the merchandising program's viability. And is that a legislative function? Is that what that's about?
Mr. Chairman, I do believe that would end up being a legislative function.
I don't know that we'll ever take off the table those things that have been around for 30 or 40 years, particularly when it comes to the privatization of OLCC or that discussion, whether or not state ought to be in the liquor business or not. However, so that you be aware, I did address, it's been two, maybe 3 years ago that I addressed Director Erickson and just asked her under what circumstances she would be willing to support some sort of a privatization model, and she just said, I don't know that I could even enter into those kinds of discussions because of my loyalty to both my employees and the agents out there. And I said, wait a minute, I'm not excluding your employees nor the agents. Maybe it would look like an entity when you're all done. The OLCC would belong to the employees of the present OLCC and the agents. You know, come up with a model that would have you folks in control of your own agency and in control of your own destiny. I don't have any objection to that at all. And then when you come back and say, we'd sure like an opportunity for an entrepreneurial investment package, you would have every reason in the whole world to keep that and do that. And I still look to that as a potential of a resolution. And if you wanted to call it a privatization or if you wanted to call it a mutualization, so that the 234 agents plus the existing employees of the department would be the new owners of the company that supplies liquor to the state of Oregon, and its 234 or more or less agents, I certainly don't have any problem with those discussions. So that would be an item. But again, that still addresses the issue of, you know, how long are we going to be around, and I don't know that we can take any action there. Number seven, that licensing, multiple-year licensing. Is there any legislative concept out there, John? I haven't seen that amongst the package that I got from you.
Mr. Chairman, we're not aware of any multi-year licensing concepts.
Okay. I have a licensing bill it's 3070. Which I don't know that its relating clause is broad enough. It talks about the application fees increasing to $400. I don't know if that's that new app law would, if it's broad enough. But I would certainly offer that any amendments to that would be necessary to, number one, recapture your costs, and number two, address the whole licensing issue. And as far as that's concerned, I think it's, and it may be within that, yes, I believe it was within that, that perhaps there should be some oversight within the agency as to whether or not those licenses, the fees for those licenses could be set by the agency as opposed to within the statutes. And that's a portion of the discussion from what I heard from Mayor Drake, that is a portion of the discussion that needs to be held. And that you folks could then set your 2-year licensing fee based upon renewals and what your new applications would be, and base it upon a non-lucrative but also remunerative relief based upon your actual cost, so that it is, in fact, as Mayor Drake indicated, kind of self-funding in that regard. And I would certainly be supportive of those kinds of discussions. So if that bill can be used to, number one, move us out to a two-year permit span, and then number two, if there's another in there, I think I have another couple of bills in there to assist with other kinds of issues that were brought up in the interim, that if any of those can be used for putting the OLCC on a course for self-funding of its licensure, I would be happy to do that. Number eight, so we'll handle that statutorily. Number eight deals with the permit, the new liquor licenses and the local government's review process. I assume that's statutory, that 30-day.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. And Senate Bill 724
addresses that.
Okay,
so SB 724 will address that. And then number nine, explore the opportunity to reduce investigative duplications, OLCC, and the lottery. And that was something that I had folks come to me in the interim, including a handoff package. The lottery agent came 3 days to talk only to the owner, and on three different days at inconvenient times when the owner wasn't there or wasn't able to attend the OLCC handoff agent. Three different calls to the store, to the agent's store and location, and finally a personal handoff. And if I go under this, you'll see who it is. But it's the reports that the machine prints off, that he can print off, that he or she, the agent, can print off himself. And this was a third visit, third or fourth visit, to deliver this stuff from the Lottery Commission. And I'm saying, oh, that's a group of folks that have way too much time on their hands to be doing those kinds of things. So, and
it wasn't
OLCC. It was the lottery. Because you folks, and this was the comment. Boy, I wish we had these folks that would coordinate their activities with the Liquor Control Commission, because our people are efficient when they need to communicate with us. They know how to communicate. They know where we're at. They know when I'll be here and when I won't be here, or when we're going to be busy and not. So I don't know. That's something that needs a lot more coordination. And I don't know, Representative Patridge, it would require anything that you get into with regard to the lottery requires a constitutional amendment almost, doesn't it?
Most of the stuff.
Okay. Well, that's pretty heavy duty stuff, but it's certainly the Lottery Commission could be encouraged to bring its investigative and licensure procedures more in line with the OLCC, and that maybe is something that we'll need to work with the chair of the Lottery Commission, to have them get together with the chair of the Liquor Control Commission to see if we can't have them have those folks merge that into a, and it, I think it probably could be done administratively from their side if they would be willing to do so without any kind of a constitutional, because we can't as a legislature, it's my understanding, we cannot direct them to become more efficient.
Mr. Chair,
I think that their enforcement provisions, though, are purchased through the Oregon State Police. We have some ability within the Oregon State Police budget to control what goes on there.
But they don't want to drive them away from purchasing those from the state police either.
Well, they have to have some enforcement provisions, I think, constitutionally. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, regarding that, our investigations of licensees typically take place before the lotteries, because the lottery doesn't give any licensee lottery privileges until they have a liquor license. So we do the investigation to start out with, and the lottery actually comes and uses our investigative information, and they use that as their baseline to build on.
My concern is that I have had constituents, and we may have had other constituents, it's not just anecdotal evidence, but actual physical contact with the folks that have come and said, I've got my blessing from the OLCC, and now I'm waiting an extra 30 or 45 days to hear back from the lottery. And what are they going to do? They're basically going to take your information and massage it in whatever fashion that they are, and it should not take that kind of time. We're anxious for jobs and business to progress and grow in the state of Oregon in the current economic environment. Number 10, allowing the liquor licensees to use bank cards. And I think that's a budgetary issue, and it probably is rules and...
Mr. Chair, it's statute.
It is statutory?
It's statute.
Any statute to...
Off the top of my head, I do not have it. Just one thing to note here. Just my chairman is telling me I need to identify this issue a little bit better. So just in a nutshell, let me explain this. Our licensees at this point are not able to use credit cards. And one of the reasons I believe that the legislature made that determination when they developed the statute is that our licensees get a 5% discount. So they get the 5% discount on the product. It would cost the state the 1.8% in fees to use the credit cards. So you'd actually be giving licensees 6.8%, if you will. And also the time frame, 30 days to pay, which is a little different than what goes on in the beer and wine industry. There's a bill now to allow beer and wine wholesalers, retailers, to have five-day payment.
As opposed to cash on delivery.
At the time of delivery. So this is a little more complicated than simply allowing licensees to use credit cards.
It certainly is a, if it's a statutory issue, it certainly is a fiscal issue as well. And I guess I've got a concern that as a former licensee, I paid COD on everything that arrived at the cooler. And my concern is that if we if those liquor licensees, the taverns, can't bring a check with them at the time that they pick up from the liquor stores, then that would be that's hard for me to believe as a retailer that couldn't happen. So that is a statutory as well as a fiscal issue. And really, we could open the statute up so that it would be available, and then you could examine the other possibilities at that point. So, but to my understanding, there's no existing legislation, anything that's pending that would allow that. So, and maybe I could work in the interim with Mr. Stuvenvall to address that issue and maybe get into it a little further. And number 11 was the Business Advisory Board to consult with the OLCC. And that's just a business practice, it appears, there.
Mr. Chairman, I think our commissioners could determine to do this.
Yeah, that's just a business practice. And then does that Senate Bill 724 also open up the brew pubs? Because I think Senator Farioli was working on that.
On the 500 to 1,000
yes.
barrels? It's actually not that bill, but there is a bill, and I believe it's already passed and is at the governor's office for signature.
It's passed the House.
It's moving right along.
Okay, great. So legislatively, that's handled. And then the privilege tax, you've got one of many, many bills outstanding on the privilege tax, so that will be an issue which will yet be addressed. Thank you very much, Mr. Hagar. Are there questions? After having examined those 13 issues, the 12 consensus items, not one with majority. Thank you again. We appreciate your good work. And again, our thanks to Senators Farioli, Morissette, and Representative Johnson for their work, as well as the other members. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Mayor Gregory. Yeah. Next I have on the list is Chair Lane. Chair Lane. So he's been whispering loud enough that I've heard him several times back there. Time to identify himself for the whisper record.
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Chairman, I am Phil Lang. I am chairman of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, but that's been the story of my life. When I try to whisper something to someone, everyone in the room hears it. And I guess it's because of how deep my voice is that it carries that way. Sometimes it's been much more embarrassing than it was.
The whispering those sweet nothings is not something that you want to do in public.
Huh? We're glad he loves his wife. And we all know her.
Mr. Chair.
And for the record, you should say that.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I thought it was he whispers because the way these wings were constructed.
the good acoustics.
They're built for a
dog. One of the things I'd like to mention about some of the issues you were just talking about before I really start talking about what I wish to this morning is on the subject of multiple-year licensing, the 2 years. 4 years ago, when we revised our licenses from 30-some down to 12, the task force that worked on that, and I believe it was Senate Bill 300 that passed at that time, actually made that recommendation that we considered doing that. And I believe that came forward even in the bill. Objections were raised at that time, but mainly by the cities, and mainly by, I think, the city of Portland, but some cities, not all of them in the state of Oregon, besides the liquor license, require the establishment to have a business license. And it was a situation that they were concerned about whether that was going to preclude them from collecting double the annual fee and things like that in connection with their business licenses.
That's why I asked Mayor Drake, Chair Lang, whether or not that would conflict with the city. He didn't think it would with regard to his city. I don't think it does with most cities.
I think it's a good idea, personally, Mr. Chairman, and I think the majority of our commission feels that way.
Well, you can only pluck so many feathers out that goose before it starts to be pretty cold in the wintertime, so I appreciate your comments on that.
One of the interesting things about our commission, and I don't think that we really have had the opportunity for to review the membership of the commission, but there is a commissioner from each congressional district. When the commission was originally enacted in 1933, there were only three congressional districts in the state of Oregon, so there were three commissioners on the commission. And as we've increased the number of congressional districts, now we end up with five. The Knox report in 33 said that they chose the system of managing the liquor control system because they wanted to remove it from politics. They wanted three honest and reputable citizens to manage the affairs of the Liquor Control Commission.
Well, it knocks out all former legislators, doesn't it?
But anyway, it's worked well for the state of Oregon up until this period of time. One of our commissioners from Eastern Oregon, from the 2nd Congressional District, is Ray Baum, who is a former House Majority Leader. And one of our commissioners from the 4th District is a woman by the name of Christine Lewandowski. And her husband, Carsten Rasmussen, served in the state Senate. He's now a circuit court judge in Lane County. A commissioner from Portland, the 3rd Congressional District, is an African-American female attorney who works for Portland General Electric. And then for the 5th Congressional District at the present time, Commissioner Bob Fuentes is a restaurant owner. And he is not eligible for reappointment to the commission because he's finishing 10 years service on the commission. And there is a term limit of actually two full terms of 4 years for the commission. He served out someone else's unexpired term at his beginning. But, you know, it's a very representative group of people, and most of our decisions, very interestingly, are unanimous decisions. Occasionally they won't be, but most frequently they are. One of the things that I personally, when I came onto the commission 5 years ago, realized is that agents' compensation was a major problem. And it has increased in the severity of the problem over the five-year period of time. We asked our agents to do a lot, you know, expecting them to keep the stores open 6 days a week, 8 hours a day, 48 hours a week. Now we have Sunday openings as a possibility for them. Certainly it's their decision whether they do it or not. But unless there's some way to provide for additional compensation for them, there isn't really much incentive. Many of our agents live in and operate stores in areas where there isn't a lot of growth. And those agencies have a fairly static sales level. And so they don't really realize any increase in compensation. Even though you see the sales increasing from biennium to biennium, my guess is that less than half our agents are actually recognizing much of an increase at all in their sales. And it's the big agencies up and down the corridor, certainly, where the population is increasing, where this has occurred. The cost of lease has gone up. The minimum wage has gone up. Most of the agents, when they hire help, don't hire at a minimum wage, but that wage compression thing takes place. And so, you know, the level that they have to pay to get the people who are responsible enough to be selling and managing their stores and everything has increased. And I don't see any slowdown in that for the agents at all. One of the things, and Senator Hannon spoke to it indirectly, is the limitation on the expenditure for agents' compensation. And because of that, and the disappropriation bill that was passed earlier this session, really was unfair to the agents because it is going to reduce their commission if the sales achieve over a certain dollar amount. Well, you know, there's no incentive in that for the agents at all. And to be perfectly honest with you, and I don't know whether they will express their feelings to you as much as they have to me, but they're pretty angry about it. And I think, you know, justifiably. This is a part of state government that produces revenue for the legislature, and we should be doing things to encourage an increase in responsible sales. And our new stores that we've brought online that are very attractive, they're in good locations and everything, these people are increasing their sales rapidly. But many of our agents who have stores that really need to be improved are in a category where they probably don't have the money to do it, and they don't have the money to move. We're asking them to do those things, to try and improve their location and to improve their appearance. There are stores that I've had not only women but some men say it's so disreputable looking that we don't want to go there. Or it's in an area that they don't want to go into, you know, and things like that really hurt the reputation of the state of Oregon, because even though they are independent contractors, the general public thinks those are state stores, you know, and so it's the state of Oregon in their eyes that we're talking about. I think that very easily, by doing the things to encourage the moves to better locations, the appearance of the stores, the effort on the part of the agents to try and sell up to higher values and everything would more than compensate for what I would recommend moving from 8.54% to 9% for this coming biennium. It would be a little over a 5% increase in their current compensation. It would be 5.39%, and it would, based upon our projection for this biennium, it would cost about $2.5 million. My guess is that at the end of this biennium, if those things happen and they were given that increase, that you would find that our sales would actually exceed what we have projected by more than that dollar amount.
So the 8.1% increase in projected sales would actually increase more than the 8.1, sufficient that there would be
additional. No, it's not 8.1. Oh, I see what you mean.
The sales increase from last biennium to this.
I haven't used that figure, but that is the figure that we use from the
project the new.
But that I'm fairly confident that would occur.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lang, you've spoken very compellingly about the inequity to the agents. And so help reconcile for me, given the current landscape, OLCC's demand on the agents to do information technology improvements during these difficult times.
This is a proposal at the present time that has to come before the commission for approval. We're going to provide an opportunity for the agents to respond to the memo that was sent out at our April meeting, and the final decision has not been made on that. It's something that needs to be done, and there are a number of methods of funding. We would like to see a funding by a temporary increase in the price of liquor. That's opposed by the distillery industry. The DISCUS is opposed to it and has been working behind our back to try and convince the members of the legislature that this shouldn't be done. The other way of maybe allowing them to have enough money to improve that interface that they have with us is by this increase.
Representative Johnson, follow up, and then
I haven't done the math. Would the increase in the cost cover both agent compensation that you've just described, the 5.39, as well as create the opportunity for agents to move to the technology improvements that you're advocating?
I would think it probably would in almost all cases. Some of our agents are up to speed at the present time, and we're able to get that kind of current sales information. One of the other things that would result, by the way, of having the majority of our agents interfaced with us so that we could get sales and information on a daily basis is that we would have better control of inventory, and we'd know when they were running out in the store, and also the suppliers, the distillery industry, would have better information in keeping us supplied.
I don't debate the value. I'm just trying to figure out how to pay for it.
But that would allow us to have fewer a smaller amount of inventory in the stores. So there would be dollar savings to the state on the inventory that we don't have sitting out there on the shelves or the back room in the stores.
Representative Johnson, could you work with Karen to figure out this issue of just the compensation timing? I would like to have Karen, could you work with Representative Johnson to get back tomorrow? I need to have either a handout or something that we can understand this A-B compensation issue so that that can be addressed. I can't imagine that that's making the agents all that happy either. So if we could have you give that brief report tomorrow with some kind of a handout, I would appreciate that. And then Representative Patrick.
I just have a question. I mean, I believe the agent compensation issue is a big issue, too, but if you also believe that it's going to increase sales, in a time when we're cutting A&D budgets and everything else, what does that do to the driver? I mean, where are you going to pick up that sales? Do you pick up the sales in population increase? Pick up the sales in more consumption per individual? I mean, you got to sell. You're given the incentive to sell more. What does that do to our other drivers on our budget? Bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Petrie, I think all you have to do is look at this past biennium and what has happened. We've been in a real downturn for the full 2 years, and our projections at the end of the last session have been exceeded substantially. In fact, we updated them one time already during the interim, and we've updated them now again, you see.
Chair Lang, isn't it buying up, and not necessarily quantity, it's buying up in price?
It's mostly, I think, resulting from a buying up. And the incentive for the appointed agents, the contract agents, to take the time to recommend a buy up, unless they see something more in it for them than occurs there at the present time, I'm not sure that will continue.
So just to be clear, so you're saying that the projections are going to be buying up in higher priced, higher quality liquor?
I think so.
I think we
That's
do.
That's hard to believe during the recession.
I think I we do have a graph on that, too.
When I was first told that, I wasn't sure I believed it. But I think that the people that have control of our inventory...
Well, that $120 I spent down at the liquor store at noon yesterday buying up, that was it.
That was, just
that was much more than I spent last year. So.
Just to make it through the afternoon.
Just to make it through the afternoon.
He borrowed my catalog, actually.
Yeah, I borrowed the devil's catalog.
I think that the actual consumption...
And the prices were right, yeah. By the way.
I think that Ms. Gregory provided us a handout dated yesterday, the 18th. Yesterday.
Consumption has gone up slightly, I believe, hasn't it?
It shows the consumption, the alcoholic beverages per capita going back to 1985 was, and I don't know what the units are necessarily here, was at about 27.4, and it's down to about 26.4 at this point. So it's actually gone
what
down.
What page is this on?
This was on the handouts from
right.
yesterday, about the fourth one back.
But it's gone up in recent years.
It's gone up from 01 to 02, from about 27 or 26 to 26.4.
Yes.
This is consumption, though.
That's consumption of gallons, alcoholic beverages. So what you've got is, with an increase, you've got increase in gross sales, which is an indication that either the prices are going up or you have a actual buy-up. And I think that's what the agents told us that they would do for us last time, and they have delivered, that they would attempt to sell the more boutique and the higher end beverages.
But we haven't had an increase in per capita consumption.
No, we did not. Well, we did 01-02, a slight from 26 to about 26.4, and I'm just looking at the graph and estimating that. Karen, do you have actual numbers other than the graph?
Mr. Chairman, just one clarification. This particular graph deals with beer, wine, and distilled spirits as far as consumption. It's
I
not
see.
Simply distilled spirits.
Okay. I see it.
All right. Okay. Senator Devlin was recognized.
It's like fancy coffee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question came up in curiosity. Most businesses that deal with selling a product would keep, well, large businesses, would keep some real track of the demographics of their purchasers. Have you done any studies like that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, I don't believe we specifically have in connection with purchases. We have cards in the liquor stores that customers can, you know, communicate with us of how they feel about what kind of service we're providing them, but it doesn't deal with their kind of sales or anything. We just look at what we're moving through the warehouse and moving to the various stores, and with the expansion in single malt scotch or flavored beverages of one kind or another, rums or vodkas or gins and you know, things like that, we know that people are buying up because those items that are more expensive, people are demanding.
I was just curious because you know, prior life, looking at what some businesses have done, I mean, they could tell you the range of buyers, the age, you know, basically anything that you'd want to know about the buyers of their product, which might get into a different set of issues in the legislature, but just at the same time.
This electronic system that we would like to have installed, and really at some point in time we're going to have installed, will tell us where that liquor is going, whether it's going just to an over-the-counter customer or whether it's going to one of our off-premises or our on-premises licensees. And that's the kind of information that the distillery representatives, the manufacturers, really would like to know. Is where their product is being used.
Mr. Chairman,
please follow up, Senator.
I do share your concern, although I've given the nature of our problems that we've had. I can understand how that item came in to be part of that six special session package,
right,
our unofficial six special sessions. But it did seem particularly egregious to me in a sense because, as my memory is correct, we also pushed out in one of the earlier special sessions the opening on Sundays to try to encourage people,
right,
to have greater sales, to try to basically improve our bottom line. And then when they did have greater sales, we took part of that away. But
one of the things I think, Senator Devlin, is that as a group, the agents have decided, even though that they were very angry, and that's fine for them to get angry at me. They don't need to get angry at the members of the legislature about it. I guess that's why I get paid so much money for this job as chairman of the Liquor Commission. But they're willing to put that behind them, you know, and concentrate and focus on trying to improve the compensation for the future. And I sincerely believe that if you would do that and set that at 9% and give us a non-limited expenditure on agents' compensation, that you'll more than realize the amount of money that that increase would cost.
Thank you, Senator. And just reviewing the numbers, we do have an 8.1% projection right now of increased sales from last biennium,
right,
and it was an 8.8% actual increase in gross sales from the prior biennium to the 2001-03 biennium. So that would account for a rather substantial increase. But then when we look at Oregon's population figures, we've got, well, that, I don't know that that mirrors. I think the population we said was going up by something in the city, about 6% on a biennium, maybe not. I'm trying to remember what that was. But at any rate,
there's a slowdown in growth, certainly. And I think rather than having an 8.8 and using 8.1 in the projections, that our people were considering the fact that the economy is in tough shape.
But as Representative Patridge asked somewhat incredulously, that they are in a recessionary time. They are buying up.
They are buying up.
Okay. Are there further questions for Chair Lang? Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you did a comparison between the last time with each one of our recessions, will it show that there is a tendency of increase in alcohol consumption?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, I'm not sure I can answer that. I don't know if someone on staff can. Alex?
Chairman Butler, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Alex Lennox, research analyst with the commission. Senator Winters, the last major recession we had was in the 1980s. I wasn't in Oregon at the time, so doing very different things then. And we experienced a substantial decline in per capita consumption at that time, but it was not attributed to the recession. That was also the time when there was a dramatic push against DUII. Related events and a dramatic push against alcohol consumption in general across the entire society. And most of the consumption decline was associated with that, as well as a change in consumer tastes from distilled spirits to lighter alcoholic beverages, beer and wine in particular. There's a recent study done out of New York, the National Bureau of Economic Research, which I can't recall the exact conclusion at this moment, that did look at alcoholic beverage consumption and recessions and general economic downturns. I could be glad to get a copy of that for you if you'd like to look at that. But
I would, because there's the general, I think, thought that in an economic downturn, because you have the domestic violence tends to go up, some of the other factors tend to go up, and whether or not the alcohol consumption, which tends to be another one of those factors that's involved in domestic violence, if those consumptions are going up, and it could be just what the person is drinking rather than, if it's not spirits, maybe it's some other form of alcohol or illicit stuff.
Well, Representative Butler and Senator Winters, that, in terms of alcohol-related violence and alcohol-related problems, by far the vast majority of alcohol-related problems are associated with beer, not distilled spirits. If you were to look at consumption in this state, there's approximately 19 to 20 gallons of beer and wine consumed in Oregon for every gallon of distilled spirits consumed in the state. So that's not to say that abusers and other people with alcohol-related problems don't consume distilled spirits, but the likelihood that distilled spirits is directly related to that is much smaller than other beverage types.
I guess I was just using alcohol in its broad generic term, whether one was talking distilled spirits or whether they're talking about beer or wine, but if those consumptions are up during an economic downturn.
Patrick?
I just had a question back on the compensation issue, Phil. Mm-hmm. But I was at the liquor store yesterday following our hearing.
Doing field research.
No, that's incredible.
I know it's been a political debate in the buildings from a substantial vantage point about whether the liquor store, the licensed liquor store, should be able to sell beer and wine. And I know it's a substantial debate in the building. What would that do to agent compensation? I went there. I bought the alcohol, but I couldn't buy any beer or wine.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patrick,
it wasn't a full-service party place.
Many of the stores probably aren't large enough to really accommodate much of a selection of beer and wine. At one time, our stores did sell wine, and particularly the fortified wines, and some states do sell both the beer and wine only in their state-licensed liquor stores. Pennsylvania is one of those states. But you have to actually go to one of their stores in order to buy beer and wine as well as distilled spirits. It would be a major change in what goes on here in Oregon. The grocery industry certainly wouldn't like it. And the convenience stores wouldn't like it because that is a high percentage of the convenience store sales is in beer and wine. And so, you know, it's could ask some of the agents if they're going to appear and testify. And my guess is that individually they probably have different opinions about it.
Follow-up, Representative?
But are there any negative ramifications that the OLCC is aware of on major societal impacts, or is it just a political fight that we face in the building?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patrick, I think it's mainly a political fight and a fight over turf.
Senator Devlin, you have a comment?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. One, I think that the grocers would ask for quid pro quo,
sure,
in terms of being able to sell distilled spirits. Two, if we ever discussed this in any degree of reality, we'd have to move to a different hearing room for the number of lobbyists that would probably be in wanting to testify.
Well, nobody's burst in the door yet.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, it probably would increase the amount of money that a lot of the lobbyists were making, and there would probably double the number of lobbyists in the building. I agree with that. It would be a very hot issue. It's certainly not something we're advocating.
My first session, we did discuss the potential for boutique wines. I think we specifically called it boutique wines that potentially could be sold in liquor stores. Not a lot of shelf space that were involved, but fairly high end. And I know that during that entire interim of the 1999-01, that was an issue that folks did try and attempt to figure out how that would be accommodated, and how that could be accommodated, and I think finally grocery stores agreed that they were just going to start carrying as much of that as they possibly could. So I don't know that we've got full market penetration, but I would say this. I still came away with the impression that the liquor stores, the state's agents, should be allowed to carry anything that is not carried within 10 or 20 miles of wherever they're at.
In most cases, you're talking about small communities. In most of those communities, we have the non-exclusive liquor stores. And many of those are in grocery stores. And so, in essence, you have a liquor store where they are able to buy beer and wine. And the grocery industry and the convenience stores don't quibble with that. The state of Washington actually sells wine in their liquor stores, and they still have some state-owned and state-operated stores as well as some contract agent stores.
And in that regard, perhaps there should be a C-level store that has you've got A and B licenses, and maybe there ought to be a C-level license that would authorize, you know, after a survey, that if you do not find products that, and I think you call them fortified. We discussed what fortified meant. We know that grapes have iron, so we thought they'd have extra iron.
It's extra alcohol.
Oh, extra alcohol. I see.
Makes you warm and fuzzy.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was the vitamin fortification that was doing that. But
you need to get out more, Mr. Chairman.
I guess. They do not. When you meet with this crew, they do not give free samples. That's what I found out. But anyway, I'm still strongly of the opinion that that if a liquor store in the local area does not have a penetration of certain market items that would be high end, and whether they be fortified or whether they be called boutique, that if those items are not readily available in the community at the local retail store or the convenience stores, that they ought to be made available through the OLCC. Now, I understand that is a rule-making issue and not a legislative issue. So, and that's why we continued to work on it during my first session, was in hopes that you'd be able to find some products that could be compatible to the existing liquor store business without infringing too greatly on any of the other folks.
By the way, one thing I didn't mention, and I should, that has impacted agents adversely. Many of the agents sell a lot of cigarettes. Cigarette sales are down because of the increase in the cigarette tax.
About 30% down right now.
You know, and that has really impacted many of our agents adversely.
Okay, are there further questions for Chair Lang? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For coming, Phil. Appreciate it. Now, we didn't have any other invited testimony today. I think we've got public testimony scheduled for tomorrow. Let's see. Okay, continuing overview, and we have finished. We were getting ready for support services program overview yesterday, and we've got about 2 minutes to do four things. So where do we want to go? Support services?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd ask Merle Lindsay to come up and do a two-minute overview on support services for you.
He can do that.
Chairman Butler, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Merle Lindsay, Director of Administrative Services Division. And under your support services TAM, you can see that our support services program is really divided into three units. Administration, which has responsibility for the policy setting, public information, and our internal and external communications for the agency, as well as providing support in our contested case hearings. The administrative services includes our technology, our general services, which is our non-liquor purchasing, as well as provides support with our contracts and purchasing efforts. And finally, in fiscal services, which you heard Ms. Gregory talk to you on Monday, the unique thing about that particular division is it also includes the privilege tax, the beer and wine tax collection for the state, as well as providing liquor auditing for our 238 agencies located throughout the state. That's pretty much our support services program, and I'd entertain any questions you may have about that.
We will have, I'm sure, additional questions regarding the technology package, which we have, and that'll be a separate issue. Are there further questions for Mr. Lindsay? Hearing and seeing none, we're at that even hour. Tomorrow we're going to go into agents' compensation overview, and then in the, probably in-depth, and Representative Johnson will give us a report first up. So
With that, we will stand adjourned until tomorrow.